I'm pulling out my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so one of my ongoing quests is to talk about every Magic expansion in existence. So I am up to Meriden Besieged, which is today's topic. So I've talked about Scars of Meriden before, but let me refresh a little bit to set the tone for Meriden Besieged. So the original idea for Scars of Meriden block was that we were going to begin in New Phyrexia. That the first set, the fall set, would be New Phyrexia. And then we'd be in New Phyrexia for, you know, three sets. And in the very end, there'd be the big reveal. Dun, dun, dun. This is actually Meriden. So what had happened was, in the story, the Phyrexians had been a big part of Magic's story. They're the main villain in the Weatherlight Saga. At the end of the Weatherlight Saga, they are apparently destroyed forever. But they're awesome villains, and since they can be recreated from a drop of oil, we felt like maybe they're not gone just yet. So our plan was we wanted to bring them back. And so what we did, Brady Dunmarth and I were very involved in this, is in the original Meriden story, if you read the novel, the bad guy, like in the first couple pages of the novel, deals with some oil that goes in his fingers and sort of evaporates into his skin. And not much is said about it. Basically, the Karn, who at the time was infected, ends up bringing, not realizing it, bringing the Phyrexian oil to Meriden, the world that he created. And so, anyway, it was a slow burn. Like, we set, like, little hints up that Phyrexia was going to, that Phyrexian had now started to invade Meriden in the first Meriden set, but pretty subtle. And the idea was we were going to come back and that Meriden, the plan had always been that that Phyrexia overtakes Meriden to turn it into New Phyrexia. That was the plan from the very beginning. And then kind of what worked really well is Meriden ended up being this very powerful set. In fact, almost too so. And the idea that even the Meridens couldn't hold up against the Phyrexians, we thought was pretty powerful. Because the idea was we wanted to put the stake in the map, the Phyrexians are back. And the idea of this whole block was just, you just have to learn the Phyrexians are back. The one Achilles heel of the Phyrexians is they don't have the ability to travel between worlds. And so we learned that they overtake Meriden, but now they're trapped on Meriden. But if they get out of Meriden, you know, the multiverse is going to be in trouble, which obviously later paid out in a big story. So the idea was originally that we were just going to do New Phyrexia. So I spent a bunch of time, and then I really was spinning my wheels. In fact, for those who have never heard me tell my story, I think the greatest crisis of conscience I ever had as a designer, as a lead, was on this set. And in fact, at one point, Bill actually said that if I couldn't resolve it, he was going to replace me on the set. But he said to me, he had faith in me. He said, I believe you're a good designer. I believe you can figure this out. And so I really had a heart-to-heart, and what I came to realize was that we were telling the wrong story. That the fall of Meriden to Phyrexia was just a really cool story. Why are we skipping past that cool story? Like watching Meriden fall to Phyrexia. So the pitch I made to Bill is, what if New Phyrexia wasn't the start of the block, it was the end of the block? And the idea was that we come back to Scars of Meriden, there's this little hint that Phyrexia is there. I mean, not very loudly that Phyrexia is here. And then we would have a giant war. And then it would become New Phyrexia. And then Bill pitched the idea, what if we didn't know the outcome? I'd pitched the idea of the big war. So the second set's a war. And then the idea is, we were going to say to the public, hey, we don't know what happens if, you know, Phyrexians win, it's New Phyrexia. But if Meriden wins, it's Meriden Pure. Like, we don't know who's going to win this war. Now, obviously, behind the scenes, we knew for sure who was going to win the war. It was just sort of a dramatic thing. And we were, at this point in the process, we were just trying to find more ways to make pre-releases kind of more intriguing. So, Meriden Besieged had probably one of the most exciting pre-release things we'd ever done. Maybe ever done. I don't know. It's pretty cool. So what we did is, in Meriden, the Phyrexians were about 10% of the set. And then, in the middle set, they were going to be 50-50. Half the set would be Meriden, half would be Phyrexia. Like, we'd see the heart of the conflict, where either side could win. And the final set, New Phyrexia, I forget exactly, The first set was a large set. The second set was a small set. The third set was like a medium set. So I think in the third set, the fractions were like 80%. It averaged out to being basically throughout the course of the block, half of it was mirrored and half of it was Phyrexian. But the Phyrexian part sort of came off over. And then one of the things we decided to do was use watermarks. I'm trying to think. I think Ravnica was the first place to use watermarks. But the idea was we're going to tell you whether the card is Phyrexian or was Mirin. And then in the first set, you could see that most of that is Mirin, just a little bit's Phyrexian. In the middle set, you could see it's half and half. And the third set, you could see, oh, it's clearly, there's a few Mirrodin holdouts, but it's mostly Phyrexian. So that brings us to Mirrodin Besiege. So Mirrodin Besiege, from the very beginning, was designed to be the war set. It was a set in which you would come to the pre-release, you would choose your side, are you Team Mirrodin or are you Team Phyrexia? And then you would get a pre-release pack that only had the cards from your side of the conflict. I think there were a few that were not, a couple that were neither. Maybe you could get those in either thing. But the idea was you were fighting as one side or the other. So one of the things that we did in the set. So first off, it's Mirrodin, right? So we are coming back to Mirrodin. So we did return. Let's walk through the mechanics in Scars of Mirrodin before we get to the mechanics in the set. So. We wanted to represent the Phyrexians and the Phyrexians' influence. And so the two ways we did that was we had Infect. So Infect was a mechanic that said all your damage is dealt to players in the form of -1/-1 counters and to players in the form of poison counters. So if a creature was a 2/2 creature, if I dealt damage to a player, they got 2 poison. If I dealt damage to a creature, they got 2 -1/-1 counters. So the idea is they are going to infect whatever they come. Infect basically was taking the idea of the poisonous mechanic we'd hinted at in Future Sight, along with Wither, which was a mechanic from Shadowmoor. Then we had Proliferate. Proliferate said, when you proliferate, for every permanent or player who has a counter on them, you may choose to make another of that kind of counter. Scars of Mirrodin, that mostly was -1/-1 counters and poison counters, but there were we used a bunch of charge counters to represent the Mirrodin side. So Proliferate could be used to play a Phyrexian deck, although in Mirrodin Besiege, we considered anything that had Proliferate on it had a watermark that was Phyrexian. It was a Phyrexian mechanic. Then we had two Mirrodin mechanics. One was Metalcraft. So Metalcraft was basically a threshold mechanic where you needed to have 3 artifacts on the battlefield. And if you did, we did talk about Scars of Mirrodin having affinity for artifacts, which had been the original Mirrodin, but it had gone awry in the original set. Even though we kind of thought we could do it right, we were a little shy to do it, so we ended up doing Metalcraft instead. And then we brought back Imprint. Imprint is a mechanic where it tells you from some zone to exile 1 or more cards, and the card that is imprinted with those cards, something about the quality of the card it cares about. And because you have the card there as a reference, you can bond much bigger things. Okay, so that was Mirrodin. So now we get to Mirrodin Besiege. So real quickly, Mirrodin Besiege, the code names of that block were Lights, Camera, Action. So this was Camera. This was the middle set. It was 155 cards, 60 commons, 40 uncommons, 35 rares, 10 mythic rares, and 10 basic lands. And the set came out February 4th, 2011. The design team was led by Mark Gottlieb, included Gregory Marks, Ken Nagel, Mike Turian, and myself. And the development was led by Eric Lauer, and Ryan Deuce, Tom Lapilli, and Mike Turian were the development team with him. I believe this was the first set that Mark Gottlieb led, the first design team that he led, and this was the first main premiere set. Gottlieb had led some, at least one or two core sets, but this is the first main set that he led. So this was, both of them were doing it for the first time. And the art director was Jeremy Jarvis. Okay, so we decided that we wanted to have 2 new mechanics in the set. And we decided, since it was Phyrexia versus Mirrodin, that we should have a Phyrexian mechanic and we should have a Mirrodin mechanic. So the Phyrexian mechanic It was a mechanic called Living Weapon. So one of the things we realized was that when we had made artifacts, original Mirrodin had introduced artifacts. And so we were really interested in the Mirrodin mechanic, not the Mirrodin mechanic, the Phyrexian mechanic, co-opting. A lot of the fun of the Phyrexians is they co-opt the stuff from the place they're invading. So we said, oh, is there a way to do something cool with equipment, since equipment is organic and natural to, you know, it came from Mirrodin. That's where it premiered. And the idea that we came up across was, what if, like, one of the challenges of playing equipment is that you only have so many slots in your deck that aren't for creatures. And we're like, well, what if we could make equipment count for creatures? So what we did is a Living Weapon, the creatures, they're all equipment. They arrive with a 0/0 Phyrexian black germ, or a black Phyrexian germ. And the idea is all the equipment gave at least toughness. Most of them gave power as well. So, it, you know, if I give you +2/+1, now I'm a 2/1 creature. So the idea is it came equipped with this existing creature so that the equipment sort of, you could count it as a creature for your deck. You could put it in your creature count because it entered as a creature. Now, when it died, one of the upsides is, well, while you lost the counter, you still could equip it to other things. So it was sort of, it was kind of slightly better equipment, but equipment that was easier to play. And I will say that Living Weapon really, every once in a while we make something that just turns out to be a core idea that we just go back to again and again. And this is one of those ideas. The idea that I can bring out the equipment and make a body, a token body that I attach it to. Now, in the future, we learned 0/0 was problematic, only in that every single equipment had a defined power toughness, that if we make a creature that's a 1/1 or a 2/2, like, if we define the power and toughness on the creature, the equipment no longer has the responsibility of having to do that, and it just makes it easier to make equipment. So anyway, Living Weapon was the Phyrexian. The Mirrodin side was a mechanic called Battle Cry. A creature with Battle Cry said, if I attack, all other attacking creatures get +1/+0. So in general, the idea was we wanted Mirrodin to be a little bit more the aggressive side of things, and Phyrexia a little bit more of the slow build-up. Now, Mirrodin, I'm sorry, Phyrexia, I'm confusing Phyrexia and Mirrodin. Phyrexian had poison, so there was a fast strategy, there was an aggro strategy for Phyrexia if you wanted it. But the stronger strategy was a little bit better and limited, was not the poison strategy. It was the slow controlling proliferate. Like, I poison you a little bit, but then I proliferate you to death more than I kill you to death with creatures. Proliferating and -1/-1 counters and poison, like, it all sort of came together to make this slower controlling deck. So, in the matchup, Phyrexia was a little bit faster. Mirrodin was a little bit faster than Phyrexia. Although there were, like, strategies with poison. The other thing we had done is when we first introduced the mechanics in Mirrodin, Scars of Mirrodin, they show up in fewer colors. I'm trying to remember exactly. Like, I think poison only shows up in black and green in the first set. And then it starts showing up, I think, in white in Mirrodin Besieged. And then proliferate was only, I think, in blue and green in Scars of Mirrodin, and start showing up in black, I believe, in this set. But anyway, so as the thing progresses, not only does Phyrexia grow in percentages in Azfan, but we also start spreading its mechanics a little more. And another fun thing, so I was going to walk through some of the key cards, and as I talk some of the popular cards, I will also sort of talk about little different facets of the set. So the first card to talk about is Go for the Throat. So this is an instant that costs 1 and a black. It's destroy target non-artifact creature. So one of the things that we liked playing around with, and this is true of Mirrodin, is that Mirrodin set was an artifact set. There were other factors going on. There was the Phyrexian element going on. But still, at its core, we're on Mirrodin. Mirrodin is very artifact-centric. Now, one of the reasons we chose Mirrodin for the Phyrexians is the Phyrexians are also very artifact-centric. So it made a lot of sense. And so one of the things we definitely played around with is, like we had in original Mirrodin, is a lot of things are artifacts. A lot of things are artifact creatures. And so having cards like Go for the Throat, where we basically made a tear, except we took away the restrictions of non-black. We when Richard first made in Alpha, there's a card called Terror. Terror was one in a black, destroy target non-black, non-artifact creature. And for many years, we kept that rider on as if that's core to how black destroys things. Black doesn't destroy black or artifact things. Eventually, we're like, well, we learned that, well, black really can kill whatever it wants. It has no problem. Like, the reason that Terror was like, well, if I'm scaring you to death, maybe it's hard to scare a black thing to death. Flavorfully. But the idea is, well, black has no qualm with killing black things. Or artifact creatures were always sort of... I mean, black can kill creatures, so black can kill artifact creatures. Black does have a vulnerability to artifacts. Black can't kill artifacts. So the idea was, let's make terror, same cost and everything, just let's strip the non-black. We don't do non-black anymore, or rarely do non-black. And so it was us sort of coming back. And it's a pretty powerful spell. Especially in formats where you just don't expect to see tons of artifact creatures. It's pretty good. Okay, next. The other thing that had happened in Original Mirrodin, this was a throwback to, was one of the things that I had tried to do in Original Mirrodin was, because it was an artifact set with so many artifacts, I thought it was fun to do contextual stuff. And so Terror, the original Terror, was in the set because the set had Shatter and Terror. And traditionally, Terror was way better than Shatter. But in this set, because half the things were artifacts, Shatter actually ended up being stronger than Terror in the Mirrodin set in Limited. Anyway, so, and this was kind of a nod to that, too. Okay, next up, Psychosis Crawler. It's an artifact creature for 5. It's a horror. It's got star for power toughness. And its power and toughness are equal to cards in hand. Yes, it's an artifact Morrow. And whenever an opponent draws, they lose life for each card they draw. So the idea essentially is, I want to have a lot of cards. The more cards I have, the bigger I am. And as you draw cards, you're slowly zapped away. So one of the things we definitely wanted to do, because we were back in Mirrodin, is we wanted to have a lot... Like, one of the fun things about Original Mirrodin was it really leaned into artifacts. And so we wanted to have a lot of fun artifacts. And so not only were we doing the whole... Phyrexian Invasion thing, but also because we're back on Mirrodin, especially the Mirrodin was kind of going to disappear. I mean, it's in it a little bit in New Phyrexia, but we really was our last opportunity to get a lot of fun, cool, like normal Mirrodin style artifacts in the set. Okay, next up, Massacre Worm. 3 black, so 6 mana total, 3 of which is black. It's a worm creature, 6/5. When it enters, all of opponent's creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn, and whenever a creature controlled by an opponent goes to the graveyard, they lose 2 life. So Massacre Worm, first off, just kills lots of things, and then as things die, it's helping you win. And this was a very popular card. One of the things, by the way, that we definitely played around with is that we liked the idea that the Phyrexians, that -1/-1 counters, and just minusing in general, was very Phyrexian. One of our big motifs with the Phyrexian in Mirrodin, one of the things that I wanted is I wanted to give them a strong definition. And so the idea of their disease. And so there are 4 adjectives we use to describe them. They were viral, they were relentless, they were adaptive, and they were toxic. And so all the stuff we built around them. And so there were a bunch of different things we mechanically tied to Phyrexians. Life loss was tied to Phyrexians. Death triggers were tied to Phyrexians. -1/-1 counters, and in general, -N/-N was tied to Phyrexians. So, like, Massacre Worm, it does many of these things. So, it's very Phyrexian coded. Next up, the Sword of Feast and Famine. This is an artifact that costs 3. It's an equipment. +2/+2. The equipped creature gets +2/+2, protection from black and green. And whenever the enchanted creature deals damage, the opponent has to discard a card, and then you untap all your lands. It costs 2 to equip. So the swords were, we made the first sword, was it an Original Mirrodin? What is the first sword? There was, in fact, 2 swords. We made Light and Dark, and we made, what was the blue-red one? We had made them originally, we did not intend for them to be a cycle, to be honest. We had just thought, here's 2 cool cards that we made in an Original Mirrodin block. But it is hard to make 2 dots and not have people want to make a line. And so there's a lot of people wanted us to, quote-unquote, finish the sword cycle, and so we did. And then our first pass is we did all the enemy ones, and then we eventually came back later and did all the ally ones. But anyway, this was... I don't know. I mean, it's one of the enemy ones, so I don't know what order it is. But anyway, very popular cards, very powerful cards. The way that all the swords worked is you got protection from two colors. And then when you hit the when the quick creature dealt combat damage to a player, you got two effects, one in the first color, one in the second color was the idea. Okay, next, Green Sun Zenith. So there was a cycle, I think they were mythic rare. So the Zenith, they were all instants or sorceries. I think they all had X in their mana cost. And all of them, after you cast them, they shuffled into your library rather than going to your graveyard. The most popular one was Green Sun Zenith. So XG sorcery. So it's the mana value was one, technically, but it was X and a green mana. And then you search your library for a green creature with mana value X or less, and you put it on the battlefield. Then you shuffle Green Sun Zenith into your library. So by the way, the Green Sun Zenith, that mechanic, shuffling things into your library, had been one of the original main mechanics in Onslaught. It was a mechanic that went on spells and you would shuffle them back into your library. And we decided it wasn't splashy enough to really be in the volume it was, and we ended up, Onslaught went different directions. But we did like that as a splashy thing. So in this one, I think it's a Mythic Rare cycle, we put it onto it. Although we just spelled it out. We didn't make a mechanic out of it. Okay, next, Consecrated Sphinx. Four blue. It's a 4/6 Sphinx. It has flying, because it's a Sphinx. And whenever an opponent draws a card, you draw two cards. So at bare minimum, you get two cards a turn because your opponent gets a card. But this is particularly good in multiplayer where lots of opponents are drawing lots of cards. And so that's why this card sees a lot of play. One of the things that's always fun when you're doing designs is just trying to make... it's fun to make a line when you read it, you're like, what? And this is definitely one of those lines. Because you understand your opponent's going to draw cards. So, very cool. Next, Ichor Wellspring. So this is an artifact that costs two. So when it enters or it's put into the graveyard from the battlefield, you draw a card. And this was a very Johnny Jenny card. It's sort of like... I mean, not that there were some spike ramifications for it. Obviously, it's... But it's a kind of like, I have an artifact. I want to play it, then I want to get it to the graveyard, so probably I want to sacrifice it. But it helped with Metalcraft. It definitely helped with... There's just a lot of different... artifact sacrificing was a thing, obviously. And so it's this neat little toy that, like, unto itself doesn't do much. It doesn't even give you a way to get itself in the graveyard, right? Like, essentially, it's two draw card for an artifact that if I manage to kill it, I get a second card. But because it's not built in, two draw card is... not too bad. In a vacuum, it's not worth a card. But the fact that you get an extra card out of it for two mana total, it needs to be in the right deck, but it's a cool card. Next up, Dark Steel Plate. It costs three. It's an equipment. So Dark Steel was something we invented in an original Mirrodin block. Bill Rose during Torment had come to me and said... or maybe I realized this independent. But anyway, I was thinking about, we were making an artifact set, and I was like, what do people really dislike? What negative thing could I adjust for? And I'm like, you know what people hate? When someone destroys your creature. And I'm like, what if they couldn't? And I came up with an indestructible mechanic. What if something couldn't be destroyed? And then we ended up tying it to a material called Dark Steel, which the set Dark Steel was named after. That's where Indestructible premiered. And originally Indestructible was just English, like it can't be destroyed, but it's an English word. And then eventually we made it into a keyword. So now you like can grant Indestructible and stuff. Anyway, sorry, this Dark Steel Plate is an equipment that costs three. It is indestructible, meaning the equipment itself is indestructible. Equipped creature is indestructible, and it costs two to equip. So the idea is if I put this on my creature, now you can't destroy my creature or it. So it's pretty potent. Normally, by the way, when we grant indestructible, we don't make the thing that grants indestructible itself indestructible, so there's an answer for it. But this one, we didn't. But this was definitely on the Mirrodin side. That one of the things we were trying to show is that the Mirrodin were pulling out all the stops, right? The Mirrodin were making use of every tool they had available to try to stop the Phyrexians, because the Phyrexians were a very, very dangerous enemy. Okay, Next up, but the Phyrexians, not only do the Mirrodins use Mirrodin things, the Phyrexians use them as well. So next deal is Bright Steel Colossus. It costs 12. It's an artifact creature golem, and it's an 11/11. It has trample, infect, and indestructible. And then if it would go to the graveyard from anywhere, it gets shuffled in. So the idea was Dark Steel Colossus was this really impressive thing. It was a 10/10 creature with infect that I'd made. I think I made it for Original Mirrodin, but I think it showed up in... I think it showed up in Darksteel. But anyway, I made it in Original Mirrodin. The idea was that it was, we were sort of playing around with Infect. Well, Infect, when you get 10 poison counters, you die. Well, this was a 10/10, meaning if it hits you... I made a card called Phage in Legions, where if it dealt damage to you, you just automatically lost the game. And this was kind of making a new Phage. Now, I mean, there is answers to this. If you keep it from doing all the damage, it won't kill you and such. But and this became a very popular target for a while for reanimate. Or well, you had to get in your graveyard, which you can't do. So reanimation is not what it... That's why we put the rider on. I guess people have figured other ways to get it from the library, I guess. Anyway, I know there's people who, like, it's the go-to of, I want to get this in play. I think the original was 11 for a 10/10, and we made it 12. It originally was a trample 10/10... And it had, right, it was a 12/12 trampler, an indestructible 12/12 trampler. Not 12/12, 10/10 trampler. So we made it, we made it, in fact, we ended up putting it to 11. I think just because we wanted to one up from the 10/10. I mean, the idea is it hits you, you die, so 10 or 11 didn't matter too much. But anyway, one of the things that was really important is that what the Phyrexians do as a villain is they come and they make you into them. So one of the most dangerous things about the Phyrexians is they turn your own weapons against you. And what better way to communicate that the Mirrodins are in trouble than their greatest weapon has fallen to the Phyrexians? And that's what... I think, once again, I think I designed this in Scars of Mirrodin, and we realized it just had more impact in the war, so we held it off. So... anyway, that is Bright. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Bright Steel Colossus. Next, Shimmer Mirror. This is an artifact creature that costs 3. Obviously, it's a mirror. How big is it? It is a 2/3 creature. And what does it do? It has flash, and it grants all your other artifacts flash. So the mirror were a member of part of Mirrodin, a very popular part of Mirrodin. So again... Like, one of the fun things about going back to Mirrodin is, A, we got to do all the fun things we do in return, is bring back all the things people liked about the world in the first place. We brought a lot of it back. Not everything I brought back, but a lot of things. And then we also got to play around with, you know, doing new things and having Phyrexian influence. But this is definitely a Mirrodin card. Nothing about this says Phyrexian. It just says Mirrodin. The final card to talk about today is Blue Sun Zenith. It's another of the Zeniths. So it's X, blue, blue, blue. Target player draws X cards. So there's a card in Original Magic. What is it called? Oh, no, is it Original Magic? Yeah, Brain Geyser. A card called Brain Geyser was in Original Magic. It was X blue, I think. Draw X cards. Target player draws X cards. So it was used a lot because it's really good for you drawing cards, but also as a win condition because you can mill out your opponent. This was made as a nod to that. It has 3 blue mana, not 1 blue mana, so it's a little harder to use. But it definitely... So, I mean, the only reason this is below Green Sun Zenith is there's just a strictly better version of this card that exists if you can get your hands on it, but it's a hard to get alpha card, so a lot of people probably play Blue Sun Zenith if they can't get their hand on Brain Geyser, or maybe you play both. So, the pre-release was pretty cool. It was well attended. We did track how many people took Phyrexian boxes versus Mirrodin boxes, and Phyrexia edged out at Mirrodin by a little bit. Some people think that the outcome of the thirst at being new Phyrexia was a side effect of how the pre-release went. That's not the case, and there's no way mechanically we could have done that. The advertisement of the 2 sets was just a gimmick for, like, we didn't tell the stores until right before. I'm sure I will get to do a podcast on new Phyrexia. But anyway, so it was a very fun pre-release. People had a lot of fun. The other fun thing is at the Pro Tour around for the pre-release, the Pro Tour before the set got released, we had a thing called, what is it called? Giant Magic. where we played with these huge cards, and I played Richard, and I played Phyrexia, and Richard played Mirrodin, and we had this grandiose battle. I think I talked, if you listen to my podcast, I did a talk in Magic 30 about the 30 big memories, with 30 pictures and stuff. And in that talk, I talk all about Richard and I duking out. At one point, Richard becomes a double agent, comes over Phyrexia, then he's a triple agent, he goes back. And anyway, it was super fun. I had a lot of fun doing it. Anyway, Scars of Mirrodin was, for what started as a very troublesome block, ended up to be a really fun, cool block. And I really liked how Mirrodin Besiege turned out. So anyway, guys, that is my that's my recap, because I am now at work, and we all know what that means. It means the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time.